Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Yo, and welcome to the 74th episode of Lake of Rage, Pokemon Trading Card Game Podcast. I am your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, a.k.a. Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by two very special temporary guest hosts. Joining us for the 89th time, we have once again brought back Grant, a.k.a. Boo CK.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, someone who quietly last season jumped into Masters and turned into one of the best players in the game, we have Piper Lapine.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Hello.
Thank you both so much for joining us. So we have an interesting episode. I think a lot of people are kind of like, okay, we're jumping into Lost Origin stuff, but we have a regional in the Worlds format that has over 1,000, I believe it is, Masters registered. So we can't ignore that. I would not be doing my duty as a podcaster if we ignored the first regional of the season that has a huge number of people. So we're going to be doing a meta discussion for Baltimore regionals. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, I was really wanting some Lost Origin stuff, my biggest suggestion is make a prediction for the Baltimore meta anyway. And the reason for that is, even if you're not going, predicting metas is a valuable skill. So maybe take a listen to it, see if you agree with, you know, the experts, quote unquote, that we have here today with us, and see, all right, yes, I'm tracking metas correctly. So going into whether Peoria or Salt Lake City or whatever you're doing, you're kind of like, okay, I do feel confident predicting metas and all that good stuff. So this episode should have something for everyone. First thing we're going to do is I want both of my guests to introduce themselves as well as some of their accomplishments, because I asked both of them on here because they are both highly skilled players with a lot of experience and a lot of success. So Grant, can you go ahead and start us off? That way your accomplishments actually sound impressive before Piper shares hers.
Yeah, thanks. my name is Grant Mathey. I'm a 80 time, apparently, guest on this podcast. I started in right after Worlds 2019 and went to a few local events, didn't go to any regionals, and then obviously the COVID stuff. I think I was best known for anything during that period for coming up with Relish, the green Mewtwo deck, which was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed playing that, and then kind of took off a couple months afterwards. And then went to regionals this year, day-2'd Indy, top 64 in Vancouver, day-2'd NAIC. So just kind of getting my feet wet. Obviously no chance unless I think I had to win two regionals, or I think if I got second at NAIC, I could have got my invite. But just there to kind of get my feet wet and do a half rookie season. And I think I did all right. So I'll be at Baltimore and planning on going to a bunch of regionals coming up.
I'd call day-2ing an IC in addition to, you know, top 64, pretty darn good rookie season. But Piper, you recently aged up from seniors to masters, correct?
Yeah.
How did your rookie season go?
Well, I bubbled points at Salt Lake because I played Gengar. I barely tested for that event. That was my mistake. But then I played Dark Mally to UIC and top 64 there. Did the same thing to Indy. Lost my Winnedon on stream and ended top 32. Then NAIC, lost my Winnedon to Azul and ended top 32 there, and got a day-2 invite and bubbled top 32 at Worlds. So that was fun.
So incredibly impressive. I feel you on the losing Winnedons. It feels so bad, right? Like, I mean, you might disagree, but it's like, okay, I've got a win in the top 8 and you lose and you get top 32 instead of top 16.
Like, mm-hmm, for sure.
Like, I'm just scammed at that point. Like, come on. But as you can hear, both of the guests we have are incredibly skilled players with quite a bit on their resume for last season. And if you need a quick reminder on myself, I went to two regionals last year because I already had my invite going into the post-COVID era, top 16 at Salt Lake City. So I also know some stuff as well. We're not going to talk about my Worlds run. I did not bubble top 32 at Worlds, unfortunately.
We have an episode for that, right?
We do. Go back three episodes ago where we talk about the Worlds run, and it was definitely, we played Pokemon. That's what matters. Piper, what'd you play at Worlds?
I played Inteleon, Charizard, Box stuff. Fun day.
Yes, I love that deck so much. Let's actually start there then. If you are going, you are going to Baltimore.
Yeah.
Going into Baltimore, you don't have to leak your play ever. Grant, same thing. You do not have to leak your play. I'm not going to Baltimore. I will leak my play 100% because I'm not playing. But Piper, would you play that deck again going into Baltimore? Or is it like nowhere on your radar? Is it on your consideration? Are you locked into it? Like, what about Inteleon Box?
I would say I would go with Ross's list. I'd be more likely to go with that build than mine because I played like Moltres and those kind of shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just respected a lot of other decks, or like Mewtwo, V Union especially was the big one.
Are we not?
Especially after day one, but it's not as relevant.
So you're calling Mewtwo V Union the control deck. You don't think it's going to be a big deal in Baltimore?
I think it's. It definitely didn't have the great showing at Worlds I feel like a lot of people expected. Not many converted to day two from it. It feels like pretty easy to tech for because we saw with the Arcpeak Jolteon lists, they just played the Moltres, and Moltres deals with it really efficiently because every time they hammer your dark, you just get it back with Direflame. So it's much better than Crobat, I found. Like, I played Moltres V2 for the Mewtwo V-Union matchup in my Inteleon Box list.
And that's one that anyone who's played Mewtwo control, I don't know if either of you have tested the deck at all, but the Crobat VMAX, you just like hold on to all your hammers, flip like three or four at once, and you're like, oh cool, I hit two heads, you lose the game now. So Moltres is definitely a cool tech for that. Grant, do you expect Mewtwo control?
I'm sure some people will bring it. You know, there are a bunch of people that like control just as the archetype, and that's the prevailing deck at the moment.
Okay.
And people have it built already. You know, this regional sort of has an appeal two ways, like either people coming out strong with something new or something that they're really good at, or something they already have built and are just going because it's in the Northeast and easy to get to. So like, why go buy new cards to play something you already have built and have wanted to play? It's been what, 2-3 months since Milwaukee.
Yeah, and even then, no one knew that deck existed in Milwaukee. Right. Well, they might have known it existed, but no one played it at Milwaukee.
Right.
That surprise NAIC. That was cool. But anyway, so we agree Mewtwo Control is kind of like, it'll show up kind of, but maybe not worth teching for, unless you have easy techs. The cool thing is the techs for Mew VMAX and the techs for Mewtwo Control have quite a bit of overlap there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we expect? So after the quick aside, what do we expect will be the most played deck in Baltimore? And do you expect it to be like drastically this deck, or do you expect kind of like, oh, there's a few that are all kind of equal there at the top? Piper, can you start us off? What do you think will be the most played deck?
I think it's going to be somewhat drastically Palkia, and then maybe like Mew and Arc Desi Peak, maybe Arc Intel a bit closer after that.
Okay. And when you say Palkia, you mean like the Palkia Inteleon, right? Not like...
Oh, yeah, Inteleon.
Okay.
I think Jolteon is not great.
Grant, what do you think will be the like top three decks? That was a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think those are the easy top three. The distribution of those is going to be interesting. Palkia, again, it's probably the best deck overall. Like, I think you've said it before. If you want to do well, just play Palkia Inteleon and know the deck and you'll do well. Will you win? I don't know. We haven't seen it win. I think Mew will be probably close to, if not maybe more, played, just from what I said earlier. Everyone has Mew. It's a really good deck right now. And, you know, I could see a lot of people. I mean, we're looking at 1,000 masters, so I could see, you know, 150 to 200 people even bringing it.
I think one of the things when I always talk about Mew is, I don't know, either of you can correct me on this one, but I have never played a Mew player who didn't fully bling out their deck. I feel like Mew players have fully committed to the Fusion Strike deck.
Okay. I've had a lot of fully bling Mews.
So I'm in 100% agreement with both of you. I think Palkia is by far the number one deck and will be the number one played deck. And there's no reason not to play Palkia, I don't think. I don't know. Can either of you sell me on a reason why? I've been playing Palkia for 2 months now, or hypothetically, I've been playing Palkia for 2 months. is there a reason I shouldn't bring Palkia and Talion to Baltimore? Piper, you're shaking your head no, why not?
No, I mean, the thing that I found with Palkia is, like, even when you're hitting the decks like Arcdesi Peak with Jolteon, you still, like, have a solid chance of winning. Like, you just hit a scrapper and then have, like, a big blow-up turn. If you win the coin flip, you can get, like, the turn 2 Greninja. Like, there's just so much that can go wrong for the Arcdesi Peak players, and they need to, like, play the Jolteon too. Like, I don't know, it's just... It's a lot closer than the, like, it seems, I feel.
Grant, is there a reason not to play Palkia, or are you agreeing with Piper?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same thing. Other than that, it's like, you could get intimidated by the world's results and seeing, you know, 3 Pikachus in the top 4, 2 of them with Jolteon, and as of the top deck, you're going to have a target on your head, you know? So plenty of people are always looking for counters to you. You're going to have to play every match tough. And I think going back to when it first came out, I think it still kind of exists today, is you brick a lot. You know, one out of 3, 1 out of 4 games, you just hit kind of a hard brick. But that's fine, because when you don't brick, you're super fast and do a lot of damage. So I think it might be a confidence issue if anyone's considering not playing it, if they already have the cards.
I said this on the Worlds discussion. The one reason I wouldn't bring Palkia to an event and I didn't bring it to Worlds is I love everyone who is in Day 1 of Worlds. You're a wonderful player. But I overestimated the skill of Day 1 players, and I was afraid of the Palkia mirror match. And I think that's the only reason I would not bring Palkia to Baltimore, is if you're trying to win the tournament. Look, I'm calling it right now. If anyone wins with Palkia in Baltimore, it's Isaiah Bradner. The dude is half Palkia at this point. So if, like, okay, you're trying to win, can you beat him? Can you beat someone like Cal Connor's going to be there? He top cut with it, you know? Is someone like, well, the Australians aren't going to be there, obviously, but Andrew Estrada from Canada, who also top cut with, is he going to be there? Are you going to beat these people with it? And if the answer is no, then you have to ask yourself the question of, are you trying to win? If you're trying to top cut, trying to top 16 day 2, yeah, you're fine. You could lose that mirror match, but otherwise I think you need that extra little edge, and I don't know what that edge is. Grant, can you think of any edge if you're trying to beat Palkia? Like, what is your go-to strategy there?
Well, I think we talked about it in my recap for NAIC. I went 4-0-1 against Palkia, and that was just Arc Pikachu and going first. Getting down two Pikachus, and then back then, I think some people are still playing Raihan, but Raihan being able to just, if you have one down, you can Raihan and then get a double turbo and still hit for 280.
Is your actual suggestion to counter Palkia to go first?
Essentially. that is a big thing in this meta right now. It is so coin flip heavy. And at the start, you know, obviously Mew's coin flip throughout the game, but just winning that coin flip is such a huge advantage, it feels like. And then if you're a go first deck and you just set up, there's no really way to come back for the other player.
Piper, outside of going first, is there another strategy to counter Palkia?
Marnie Path has felt pretty good. Because as Grant mentioned earlier, like the 1 in 3, 1 in 4 bricks, you can abuse that a lot with the Marnie Paths. And I think that's like the big thing that the Arc Peak decks are going for. Like, obviously you have the peak to, it's a lot better going first, and you have it to pressure the Palkias, but Marnie Path bricking them is one of your better win cons.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we both in like, hey, the 4 Marnie and 3-4 Path is a valid strategy in this meta? I'm seeing some heads.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't disagree. As someone who played Radiant Charizard at Worlds, the biggest fear in the world was not 1 Marnie, not 2 Marnie, but the 3rd and the 4th Marnie. Because yeah. Eventually you're going to brick off of those. So off of that concept, off the idea of the deck bricks a lot, and my strategy against it is a bunch of Marnies. If you were to play Palkia, or just in general, are we wanting the 4 VIP pass version, you know, the Isaiah Bradner in that group, and I think the one that James Cox and Kaiwin played at Worlds, or do we want the 1 VIP pass version that Andrew Estrada and Cal Connor played at Worlds? So do you want the 4 or the 1 VIP pass in there? Piper, what's your pick?
I think 4 is always correct, because we kind of talked about how going first against Palkia is like a huge it gives you like a huge boost in winning the game. But that means as Palki, you want to go first and you need to have like a really good setup, especially like hitting Mew and stuff. Like if you only get one Palkia down, you're like very prone to just losing the game against Mew. So I think just having the four battle pass is giving you like the best early game possible, which I think is where Palkia struggles the most.
Grant, what about you? Four or one?
Yeah, it's got to be the four. Irida on the other side of it too is just so good throughout the game. And we've seen it with Mew since the start. Like just whenever they get one VIP pass in the opening hands, it's just such a different game. And the same applies to Palkia. So just hitting at least one is crazy. So yeah, you have to max it out.
So I have to ask you both, are you currently trying to meta manipulate by having Palkia play more dead cards for your Marnies?
Are you saying no. That we're playing Marnie decks?
No, I agree. I'm personally a fan of one, but I will say four feels really good in the sense that you know very quickly if you're winning or losing. Like those explosive starts feel so good to just kind of know, like by turn two, like I think I'm losing. Because with one VIP pass, you have to make comebacks. You have to pull off quick shooting mm-hmm. and Leon plays and all this cute little stuff. And four VIP passes very much. All right, I win, GGs.
Yeah, we're talking 1,000 masters here, so we're going to see a lot of inexperienced and slower games too. And so that's part of it. Everyone's talked about knowing when to scoop and not having the VIP pass early and kind of seeing the gameplay will, you know, might be an indication that let's pick this one up and go again.
Off of that, Piper, you played a relatively slow deck at Worlds. Can you offer some advice as a pretty experienced player about knowing when to scoop if you're going to play something with a Shady Dealings deck? How do you know I'm going to scoop versus continuing to play and all that other stuff?
Yeah, so there were a lot of times where I would be winning game one, then I go into game two, I see my hand, and then I like sometimes I just insta-scoop off the hand. Other times I'd like, because there was one game against Mew where they chose to go second and I had like Hoopa plus Moltres in my hand. So I think I just like saw my top deck and then immediately conceded and went to game three because I'm really confident in that matchup. I think it just depends on the matchup, especially good matchups. You'd want to concede early to get to the game three, so you have the best chance of winning. Whereas if you're, if you hit like a bad matchup, if you play it out, then you're more likely to get a tie, which is better than a loss for you.
So it's a matter of if you're going to play a slower deck or you're a generally slower player. And there's always that thing where, you know, do you slow play or are you a slower player? There is a big difference between those two things.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you know you're a slower player, you should know your matchups and you should know, like, I just need to scoop because this isn't going to go very well for me.
Yeah.
Awesome. I feel like that's really, really good advice. So the second deck, we all seem to agree on Mew VMAX as the second most popular deck. What made Mew come back in your eyes? Grant, start us off. Why do you think Mew is suddenly seeing a resurgence after falling off the last couple of tournaments?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's never really fallen off in what it can do and its power. We've known it since the start. It dominated the meta right away. And that created, you know, all these dark decks and techs to try and counter it, you know, Quad Path and Marnie and all these things. And I think we might be at a lull where it's time to come back. We've seen it do really well online, which online is a meme meta, but that's fine. It still provides some data, at least for us to see at least matchups and things like that. And Mew still continues to perform well. And nothing, I mean, what has changed in the deck? You know, maybe people are throwing Silene and things like this into it and trying to max out their damage. And we've gone back and forth between the flips. We saw the straight double turbo, you know, cut the Meloetta out. And, you know, people are always, you know, doing little things to it. And it's still super powerful and has results.
Piper, if your opponent, to go off of Grants, if your opponent flips over a Mew, let's say you're going first, are you immediately thinking they have Meloetta and Elisa Sparkle, or are you expecting something like that Michael Pramawat build from the open that's the four double turbos with all the little shenanigans in there? So are you expecting more of the, you know, Fusion Strike or more of the straight double turbo builds?
I feel like it's going to be more of the Fusion Strike. It's kind of like safe. People know what it's like capable of, whereas Pram's list, it just came out at the London Open. I think, like, one of the big issues I've run into with his list is, like, if you go second, things get, like, really awkward. Like, going first with the deck, it feels amazing, and then going second, sometimes you just have, like, some really awkward endgames.
I have to co-sign. Yeah. No, I co-sign that completely. Like, you can do cool stuff, right? Like, you've definitely done that. If you test the deck, Piper, you have to say you've done this. Avery, Echoing Horn, Cross Switcher. Yeah, it's... Ooh, it feels so good for your opponent to be like, all right, you're out of power tablets, you can't KO my Palkia, and you're like, bet. Avery, Echoing Horn, GG's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pram's list, but I agree. The Fusion Strike has to be the most popular. Grant, are you agreeing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't take away the donk factor, too. How many times, you know, speaking of James Cox earlier, that was my first round of UIC, and he hits me with the donk, like, okay, welcome to Europe. You know, and that you can't take that away from the deck. Like, that is such a, you know, added win con that other decks don't have. No, like, Arceus decks don't have that.
I think that's, being able to play a deck where you can go second also feels really good. Piper, I don't know if that's why, one of the reasons you picked Inteleon Box for Worlds.
Yeah, going first and second just feels good with both ways. Yeah. But yeah, that's probably not one of the main reasons, but it was definitely there. Like,
that was a pretty big reason I picked Radiant Charizard. It's just like, because the amount of Palkia that I was testing, I was like, I don't ever beat this with anything if I go second. I have to figure out a way to do that. I was like, oh, this deck can do it. And that's kind of it. All right, so we expected Mew. Now let's go ahead and talk about the Arc Pika stuff. Are we expecting Arc Pika to have Desi, have Crobat, have Jolteon? Like, what is the most likely partner besides the obvious Flying Pikachu? I feel like Flying Pikachu is a necessity right now. I don't know if either of you disagree with that. But Piper, are you expecting Decidueyes? Are you expecting Crobats? Are you expecting Moltres Vs? Are you expecting Jolteons? Like, what's that extra piece in those Arc Pika?
It's kind of weird, because the thing with Decidueye is, like, if you cut down on Decidueye for other stuff, then you're going to be, like, naturally disadvantaged in the mirror match when they're playing the 2-2 Desi, like, they're just not decking Worlds, which in a tournament of, like, 1,000-plus players is going to happen quite often. But, like, something for sure, I do feel like Bibarel is definitely just better than Jolteon. As I kind of talked about earlier, Jolteon, it's good against Palkia, but it doesn't always, like, work. You don't always hit the, like, turn 1 Eevee. And I feel like the consistency from Bibarel is just giving you, like, an advantage in Mirror, because Andre went 4-1 in games against the Jolteon list in top 4, I believe.
That sounds correct.
I think it was a 2-1, then 2-0.
Yeah. The finals was...
that was interesting.
So you're expecting... You think that there's going to be a large amount of people who are net decking?
Simply. Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty similar to Andre's list. Maybe a Dark Attacker, but yeah.
Okay. Grant, do you agree?
Yeah, I think we're going to see... I think the immediate reaction was you can cut that out and just put a Dunsparce in, which might apply a little bit, you know, in some circumstances, but, you know, what we've learned from the world's list is cut Charon's and play 4 boss, and so then the Dunsparce isn't that great of a attack unless you have a Rod and can bring it back, but I would think the natural progression, again, would be we are back in America, which plays a totally different style. Those two lists were Japanese lists with the Jolteon. It was like a turbo type build. Four research, which was, you know, I think, you know, Azul played 2. I was playing 1 in Milwaukee and NAIC. The use for it was very rare. But they were just turboing through, setting up and saying, you know, I've got a free retreater. I've got energy acceleration if I need it, but no healing. And that's just a, you know, slows the pace of the game down. I think that'll probably carry over. So I don't know. And I think the thought back then was your healing was to counter Arcanteleon. And we didn't see any Arcanteleon. And they can just outpace you on healing anyways because they can get the Charon's every time. And if that's not going to be a presence, and I guess we could talk about that next, but if that's not going to be there, then you don't need the Charon's. And that fills a lot of space. Cutting Charon's and cutting the Decidueye gives plenty of space to make a, you know, text for what you think the meta is going to be. And as we're saying, we think it's going to be some Mew in there. So bring back the Dark Attackers like back in Indy and the early days.
So before we get into the Arc Intel, because we will, and this kind of goes with the Arc Intel too, but you both mentioned Dunsparce. And this could be a simple yes or no, but if you were bringing Arceus, whatever, and it might be, I'd bring it if I play this or not this, would you bring Dunsparce? Piper, yes or no?
I feel like no, unless I'm playing a way to search Ordinary Rod easily.
Okay, so like Arc Intel would be maybe a Dunsparce.
Yeah, I'd probably play Dunsparce and Arc Intel, but not like Arc Aggron or Arc Peak. It's just like, if they're playing the four boss, which I think is really good, it just gets bossed and like they can just boss the B barrel later and it doesn't really do much to their prize or their prize map.
Yeah.
Grant, yes or no, Dunsparce?
I could try and manipulate and say something, but I think the answer's no. The answer's just no. Like, it's just essentially a dead card half the time. And again, like Piper said, if you can't get it back, what's the use of it?
Yeah, when your opponent has four boss, it loses a little bit of the value.
Yeah, because the Pikachu's a three prizer, so it makes a 3-2-1 mapping pretty easy.
Piper, you mentioned the Aggron. Is Arceus Aggron a real deck that you think is going to show up? Or is it a type of deck that, like, this did well at Worlds?
I think it's okay. I don't know. It seems really good in theory. And in testing, it's been fine. But it's kind of inconsistent. The best attack, like, I think, from what I found, the better attack is on the basics. So, and it only has 230 HP, so it's very prone to just getting bossed and killed, like by Palkia and stuff. And even if you VMAX, you're taking 30 damage. I don't know. It's very fragile, I feel, despite having like.
Okay.
But it does have like that big blow up factor, which is.
So it's kind of cool, but also kind of maybe a flash in the pan.
Well, I don't know, because it also top 16 the open. So it's not like it was a one hit wonder. Oh,
you're good. Grant, what do you say about Aggron?
Yeah, it's a cool trick. It's a cool wrinkle, but I think the main takeaway is that it's just Arceus is good. It doesn't really matter. Like you can play whatever you want with Arceus, and you're gonna have a pretty good time as long as you know the deck and know your outs. Because the attack hits hard, and that's always what we're looking for. We're not talking about Lost Origins, but Giratina hits hard. It's a good deck, So if you can find the partner that hits hard and 230 is better than 220, that's for sure. But we don't really see a lot of, other than, Palkia, but back, Indianapolis, people are playing the Choice Belt and the Zigzagoon. We don't really see that often anymore. So, you can live an extra turn and take a knockout on their attacker, and hopefully, Marnie Patham, and you're in a good spot. So I could see the merits of it, but yeah, and there will be definitely more play of it than at Worlds, because there was one they open a couple more. But I think you can see a decent amount. I've heard people talk about potentially playing it.
So I want to talk about the Worlds meta real quick, because I think we got through our top three decks, kind of our expectations for them. The four battle VIP pass, Fusion Strike and Mew, Arc Pika probably with a Desi. But then, Piper, you were a day two player. You saw the Worlds day two meta. You mentioned people are going to net deck from day two, which is fine, because the world champion winning deck is obviously very good. But what did you see in that day two meta? And do you think those results from day two might be a little different than Baltimore because of the sample size that was there?
Well, I mean, I sat next to Fabi in round one and I saw the Jolteon Palkia. That was pretty weird. I don't think that's a great play to Baltimore. But I think like the big thing with Baltimore versus Worlds day two is the worst record you can have to make day two, 6-2-1, and then from there, top eight is going to be like 11-2-2. Mm-hmm. Whereas Worlds, you have to go 6-1-1 or better. So I feel like the decks that you're playing are going to be a lot different. Like Palkia or Mew has are pretty good plays to go like 11-2-2. They're also good plays for like 6-1-1, but at least my logic going into it, Worlds was like, the reason I played Inteleon Box is I'm like, I have a really good chance to be able to have a really good record, because I have outs to everything. I just think I got some unlucky. I got a bit unlucky there.
So you're saying that the world's results are a little skewed because certain decks can go 6-1-1, but probably can't go 11-2-2 because there's just so many more rounds and so much more.
For sure. There's a lot more variance in 15 rounds versus 9 rounds. It's like more consistent decks are going to be a bit better for a regionals than, whereas you can go like, you can have like quirkier decks for worlds I've found in the past.
So after hearing that, Grant, you're the person who would net deck. In fact, you might be net decking for this tournament. I don't actually remember. But after hearing that, does that change you looking at the world's results and making your own 60? Like, would you now think differently? Are you still like, oh, the number one list is really good, so I should just play that?
No, I mean, it's the same way as like the way when we were planning, you know, for when I was going to EUIC, it's like, this is a different, totally different meta than what we've been playing here in the States and how we approach tournaments and regionals and things like that. I think it's the same way, you know, Worlds is a small tournament of the top players. And so you're metagaming against each other, essentially. You're not really worried about rogue things that are coming out. And that's why, you know, Mew didn't really show up that much because everyone knew how to play against Mew. And you can't get away with just being fast and strong. I think, yes, people will take world's results, but I hope they do, because I think that doesn't translate well into a regional. I think we're going to see a lot more things, and we could talk about later, like Reggie and even the Rocks deck, you know, because they're cheap, they're easy and fun to play.
Rocks. So there was a Rocks in day two of World. It's a Lunatone Soul Rock. Is that a deck that you would ever expect your opponent to flip over?
Yeah.
Round one.
Right. So it's like
that's it. I don't know.
Okay, so you're
unless
not...
I lose round one.
So you're not respecting Rocks at all, Piper.
No. I don't think there's a reason to. I don't know. Like, Frank's a really good player, but then I don't remember his record is like,
I think 2-2-2?
1-2-2? Yeah, maybe, something. Yeah. It was something 2-2. And Drew Kennett played at day one and he didn't convert to day two. Also a good player. I don't know. It like, I think I remember seeing like Frank tweet about it and say it was very, I think he said it was like matchup dependent on if he did well or something. And I feel like matchup dependency isn't the best thing for regionals, just because it's 15 rounds. Like, you're more likely to hit the bad matchups than versus worlds. I don't know.
Yeah, that is actually, now that you're mentioning it, that is something he said in the Twitter thread of like, I wouldn't bring this to a regional because you kind of have to high roll worlds a little bit. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, for sure.
Like you said, 15 rounds. Can't really high roll 15 rounds. I'm sure someone can, but good luck if that's you. So you mentioned Reggie's too. Let's talk about the online tournaments before Lost Origin came out. Piper, I don't know. Do you pay attention to online tournament results a lot?
I'll look at the ones that are like 100 plus players, see what did well, see if there's any like fun text to mess with. But I wouldn't like be basing my play off of what's been doing well in online events.
Perfect. So you're already leaning into exactly what the question's going to be. But we saw a lot of Reggies and a lot of Inteleon Charizard in these online tournaments lately, to the point where I've seen tournaments where Reggie was the number one most played deck or the number two most played deck, and Inteleon Charizard would end up at like 3-4-5, you know, like 10% meta share, 8% meta share, which to me seems ridiculous. But is that real? Like, would you actually expect Reggies to potentially be played at like a 10% meta share, or Inteleon Charizard at 10% meta share? Piper, you're shaking your head no,
definitely not. Yeah, I don't know. So I think both decks are pretty solid plays. Like Reggie's, the issue with it is consistency. Like, it's a pretty good deck. It's just a lot of the times it doesn't set up. Mm-hmm. But when it does set up, it's really good. Radiantsard, the issue is, like, it's difficult to play. Like, it's one of my top plays, but if I'm, like, really tired or, like, if I have, like, a bunch of schoolwork beforehand, I'm just, like, not gonna play that. I'm just gonna play something that I don't have to think as much for 15 rounds.
So you end up with a surprise project given to you on like Thursday or Friday, due the next Monday. You're like, all right, I gotta.
Yeah, gotta play something fast, do homework between rounds.
As a teacher, I respect that grind. Grant, Reggie's and Radiant Charizard, are they going to be played anywhere near the level that they are in the online tournaments?
You know what? I'm going to go against the grain and say, yeah, I think it's very possible. Because they've seen success, and obviously we know, you know, Reggie, it won the Champions League and has been a consistent deck for very long. And now we're seeing, you know, with the world's results and seeing it all over the internet, it's fun. That's another thing. People really enjoy playing it. You see a lot of the content creators playing it and making videos, and you know, we're seeing lists flooding the Twitter feed. I could see it. I don't think it'd be 10%. That'd be 100 people. I could see, you know, 50 to 75. I don't know if the same would go for the Charizard. It is really good. But yeah, like Piper said, it is a grind to play. Anything in Inteleon is really a grind to play, but especially a single prize. We saw both of Ross, Ross was on twice. We saw both of his games were just slugfest going to the very end. You know, if you have the stamina and think you can pilot it, sure. But I think I'd take Reggie over the Charizard as far as the numbers of the tournament.
I think what you said about the fun factor is something we should consider. So one of my biggest pet peeves, and I don't know, either of you can disagree with me on this one. Every meta discussion I would listen to before regionals, people were like, this is a budget deck, so people are going to play it because they can't afford something else. And the regional experience is too expensive for people to actually play budget decks. Piper, you're nodding your head very much yes.
Yeah, especially with like the, if you're paying $70 to enter the regionals, like, you could, like, I don't think budget's a factor at that point. Like, if you're spending $70 to get to the regionals, I think you can, like, I don't know how much the Arc Peak deck is, but I feel like you could just play that for like $100. Like, I definitely the fun aspect, but I don't think budget's a huge thing at that point. Also, like, flights are pretty expensive.
I'm glad you said the fun factor, because that's the one that I think does matter. And Arc Peak, I just looked up on Limitless, about $153 for the world's winning list, which that's twice as much as the entry fee, which, like, that's, when you put it that way, you're like, that's not that much. Like, it adds up, but also, like, you're already spending so much money. What's the extra little bit? Out of curiosity now, let's see Radiant Charizard. That's $90. Interesting. Okay, anyway.
No. The deck or the card?
Radiant Charizard's $30. So that's most of the deck.
I'm selling mine.
Also, Iridas are like $4, right? Like, that's just another 15 there.
Yeah, of the 90, 30 in Charizard, 25 in Irida, and 15 in Scoop 25? Up Nets. For four of them, yeah. So, anyway, Grant, you were saying something.
Yeah, I don't think the hard part's really the price anymore. I think it's just the availability. And, you know, I've seen variants on TCG player from I'll get something in 2 days to I'm still waiting on something from 4 weeks ago. So, and the Reggie deck's a tough one to get because you're getting six different Reggies. And sometimes, you know, if you want to buy two or three of them at the same time, that's the more expensive one. And so that does play into it. It's just the psychology of it. So you can try ordering the cheap two ones, and they're from separate sellers, and you might not get one. I think this one will be a little bit easier. I don't think people know this, but I think there's like six vendors at this one. So
really,
getting cards will be a lot easier.
Also, Full Grip was letting you pre-order and pick up there. Yeah. They did that at like Indy or something, which I think that's a really good idea. But
I think that's a great both ends,
especially with the small turnaround from Worlds to.
Anyone who hasn't been to a regional before and trying to buy the vendors, Grant, I'm not sure if you've experienced this. Piper, you played long enough. I'm like 99% sure you have. But someone will always buy out some things, no matter what. It could be Regice. All six vendors could say, someone came in and bought my 100 Regices last night. Or like as soon as they opened. So the fact Full Grip does this is so nice for that exact reason.
Well, that was that was the Lycanroc. Is that what it is?
Yeah. At India, Rahul
bought all of them.
they bought all the Lycanrocs.
And so that's
kept
that's
tweeting, and then they just didn't play it.
Right. You saw the meme. Like somebody said, Rahul came in and bought 24 Lycanrocs. So they just embraced the meme. Just were posting Lycanroc all day.
Actually, I don't know how I missed that one. That's actually really funny.
They're playing the bees, which
I saw the tweet, then I saw one of them go on stream that night. I like got their list from the stream and I'm like, where's the Lycanrocs?
Anyway, we got a little sidetracked from the main point, which was the fun factor. Reggie's is a fun deck, like, regardless. Yep. And before, Piper, are you going for another day 2 invite, or are you invite and chill?
No. I am a senior this year. I have college stuff to do.
I respect that.
We'll see.
College apps.
I could just win any IC. Oh, no. With no locals, who knows?
Right.
You're definitely capable of winning NAIC, I think, after like all those great finishes. But anyway, okay, so you're kind of in the same boat that Grant and I are, where we don't know the invite structure or the points yet. And so there's something to be said about the fun factor, because people want to go to Japan, obviously, but also we don't know what that number is. That number could be 400. That number could be 1,000. That number could just be top 32 are the only ones who get their invite. Like, we don't know. And so there's an argument of like, I have an hour drive to Baltimore. I want 9 rounds of Pokemon to be enjoyable. Reggie's is a fun deck. So there's an argument there, and there's other decks that are very fun, and people think different things are fun. Like, I've run into plenty of people who think Mew is the most fun thing in the world, and I...
Psychos.
It's fine. I don't
know. Mew is the most fun thing in the world when you have 2 battle passes in your opening
hand. Right.
Oh, that... And... You know what deck... Okay, what deck is fun? And let's see if we're gonna respect this one. Dialga. Speaking of... Dialga was played by some of the best players in the world at Worlds. And if you go to Limitless, there ain't no Dialga in that top 32. Is Dialga a real deck, or is this one that top players keep tricking themselves into playing? Piper, what do you think?
I think it seems good on paper, but then you just see like players like Stefan not do great day 2. Xander played it at NAIC and got 65th, which it's a good placement, but like, I don't know. It's just like top players you expect to see like top 8, top 16, etc., and then they're like lower or you don't see them on the Limitless page. I think it was Bert played it in the Open, and I want to say he went like 7-3 or something. I don't know. I don't remember.
That's pretty good.
But he played the Stefan list with the cross sievers. I don't know.
I hate that list personally, just as an aside.
Yeah.
I'm a much bigger fan of, I think it's Xander's list. It's probably not Xander's exact list, but the general vibe of Xander's list. I don't know about you two.
Yeah, I like the Starly Birdkeeper stuff.
Birdkeeper is one of my favorite cards. I bought 4 full arts when they were like $3 initially, because I'm like, this card's sick.
Yeah, no, I also bought 4 full arts because I didn't have them, and shipping was stupidly expensive, so... It was about the same price to get the full arts. and we were testing some weird, like, Starly Milotic stuff for Worlds.
That's cool. I don't know what you would do with it, and obviously you didn't play it, so you'd probably do nothing.
It stopped. It wasn't really working. It was really interesting, but...
That's awesome. I feel like if we didn't have Baltimore and we didn't have Bilbao... A lot of top players would be sharing more of their rejected ideas, because I got to talk to a handful of top players who told me some of their rejected ideas, and it was like, oh, that's just like, that's impressive. Like, it sounds bad. Obviously, they didn't play it, but like, so the biggest one, because I played it on stream, was Henry Brand and the Arceus Thievul, where they would just go like Avery Thievul, or they'd go like, you know, Thievul and boss your B barrel or something like that. And it was like, wait, why didn't I even think of that? That's so good. Turned out not to be that good, but I don't know. I wish more top players would spill their like bad deck ideas, because that would be super cool.
We had a solid like 5 decks with Milotic in there.
I mean, that beats
we're just like, oh, Marnie Path is really good, Roxanne's pretty good, what if they just can't do that? I don't know.
That's actually, I don't know, we're probably getting too far off the general idea, but there's a good argument there of like, Marnie was really good at Worlds. What if Milotic is good? You can keep calling for the Feebas.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
We definitely tried to fit into Radiant Charizard and just like couldn't. Because that's the only way you lose is Roxanne, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, couple more things before we actually finish up the meta discussion, because I think we've got a good idea of like, these are the decks we're expecting. Jolteon. Do you expect, not the VMAX, that, look, good for you if you're going to play Jolteon VMAX, but let me introduce you to Hisui and Decidueye, the Wand Worlds, right? Jolteon with memory capsule. Do you respect Jolteon? So not do you expect it, but do you actually respect this card in your deck building? Or are you just kind of like, it's not good enough, there's not enough Inteleon out there, and they're going to go to the bottom tables? Piper, do you respect Jolteon memory capsule, or would you if you're going to play an Inteleon?
Nope. I think it was good for Worlds. I think seeing three Arc Peak B-Barrel, or three Arc Peak decks and a Mew in top eight isn't the most like appealing thing for that. I don't think it does a whole lot against Palkia if they go first, because they just go Greninja. I don't know. It's just, and even then they play four Iridan Scrapper. If they play Raihan, that's another out. Like, they just have so many outs to get rid of the capsule. They can even just switch or kill it. There's just a lot that can go wrong with it.
Shout out to my round one of Vancouver Regionals. I got my Jolteon set up. I take a knockout. My opponent Raihan's for Tool Scrapper, and I just lose the game right then and there. Grant, do you respect Jolteon?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Vancouver. I played the same deck as you there with the Jolteons. And if you, as you do know me, I've been one of the biggest champions of Jolteon since the beginning. I just like the wrinkle that it provides. And yes, it is easily defeatable. But making them do all that means they're not doing something to set up, like, or to interrupt what you're actually doing, which is usually, you know, an Arceus and an attacker. And so you can still get your board set up while they're doing all these plays just to be able to play the game, which I think any sort of hindrance like that is such an advantage to you. I may be right, I may be wrong, but we saw it here in Worlds, you know, two of the top four. I think part of it, though, is synergy with other cards. You know, Arceus actually is a good partner for the memory capsule because you can evolve Starbirth and still power up an attacker, whether or not, you know, you're not actually doing any damage this time, but you can survive a hit then. But that was back when, I guess, when Sharon was still good. But I think you're always trying to find another partner with it, so it's not technically another dead card, because you don't want to run into a situation like the World's Finals and Andre's top four, where you're just playing against somebody with six, seven dead cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the memory capsule is so bad in like every deck.
Mm-hmm. It's playable, I definitely think, I guess. In 15 rounds, I think B-Barrel just feels much better than Jolteon's gonna feel. Because, like, I found I usually hit, like, 2 to 3 Mew a tournament, and then you're just, like, playing dead cards in that matchup. And then, like, you hit 1 to 2 at least, probably, Arc Peaks. I hit 3 at NAIC. Weird.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna play the Jolteon, like, you'd and B-Barrel, which we've done before, you need more research, because you only have, what, the 12 discard outs, mm-hmm. to clear your hand out, which that worked really well for the Japanese list, because they did that, you know, even though they didn't have the B-Barrel, they were able to keep cycling through their hand.
As far as Jolteon goes, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you know my thoughts on Jolteon after the Vancouver run. I lost to every Inteleon deck I played against. I beat all the non-Inteleon decks, but I lost to the Inteleon ones. I hate Jolteon. I don't respect it whatsoever. I already have a Tool Scrapper and Radiant Charizard. That's my play. If you haven't seen, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/mellow_magikarp. I already leaked the 60 I would play. It has not changed. Radiant Charizard. It's got a Tool Scrapper in it because you need a Tool Scrapper. That's enough. If I get Jolteon and I don't get an Irida two games in a row, good for you, opponent. I'm going to go beat literally everyone else in the tournament and be just fine. I hate Jolteon. This is something Grant and I argue about all the time. He wants to put Jolteon in everything, and I constantly say, but what if we don't?
And then it did well at Worlds.
So. You're not wrong. Yes, your idea, you are not far off the idea of the Japanese list. Now, last question, I think, is... if someone came up to you, they're versed in all the meta decks well enough, and they're like, I really want to go to Japan. I know we don't know the number, but I just need CP. I need top 256, actually, I think is going to qualify for CP at this tournament because the kicker is 800. Okay, you're shaking your head. Yes, perfect. So I need top 256 or better. what deck are you suggesting to them? Assuming, like I said, they're good at every deck, but they haven't practiced any of them enough to kind of stand out there. Grant, what would you say is the deck that you would recommend to someone who's good enough and needs top 256?
Well, I've got two runner-ups that I think that we didn't talk about that I think are viable options for easy play. Arceus Duraludon and Blissey, I think, are both pretty easy to pick up and just play. Will you do really well? I don't know. Top 256, it's tough, but it's not the hardest thing to do. It's
probably like 5-3-1 would be the cutoff there.
Yeah. So
about,
you know, you could, if you put down the Duraludon half the time, if you get a powered up Duraludon, you just sort of win. Same with Blissey, you get it powered up, you can swing really hard. A mill tank's easy to win a matchup. But I think the easiest deck, obviously the easiest deck if you can play it, would be Palkia to do well. We talked about it in the intro, but yeah, I would probably go with one of the two that I mentioned, Duraludon or Blissey, for just, you know, kind of a wrinkle, something outside everybody's purview. And pretty easy to play.
Piper, this hypothetical player that is probably a lot of people out of the 1,000, probably like 500 or 600 of them. What deck would you recommend to them?
Mew. I think you just... So Mew, you're going to be able to play pretty well, even if you're not like... Even if you haven't practiced it a ton. If you've played it a bit, you'll probably do fine with it. Like, you just have, you can beat anything with just, like, a good enough start. You can just steamroll practically everything. Mew's also, like, in my opinion, the best deck to, like, abuse high rolling. Like, if you high roll with any deck, you want it to be Mew. That's going to give you, like, the best tournament run. Like, if I knew I was going to high roll event, I would always choose Mew for that event. And just be, like, a super greedy 4 catchers, 4 cramblers.
That is a great point right there, though. If you're feeling lucky, I guess, or you're fine high rolling, you can literally win the tournament with Mew. No matter any level, any like low level of competency, you can win a regional with Mew. It's that good.
Yeah, for sure.
My pick would be, and this is the same one I handed two people at NAIC, one of which I still don't think he plays the game, and the other of which plays the game very casually because he owns a store now. And they both had win-anins to day 2 that didn't go very well, but that happens. And the deck is Arceus Duraludon. I think it is the safest, quote-unquote, pick out of anything. Like Grant said, are you going to do well? Probably not honestly. your odds of making top 8 or even day 2, they're kind of meh. Like Piper's pick, 100%. You can easily day 2 with Mew kind of at any point. But Duraludon, I think, is the safest for 256. You might sneak into day 2 and then get absolutely bodied once you get in there. But that would be my pick personally. I'm not against Blissey or Mew either. But got to throw the dong.
Yeah. I mean, I took it to Salt Lake City. That was my first regional ever for that exact reason. Like, I don't know what to expect. I'm just going to play something straightforward and simple. Unfortunately, it was when Mew was at the height of its power, and I played 2 rods too, and I went 5-4, but 1-3 against Mew. So that will always be an issue. But we're seeing with the different variations, and if you play a rod, you know, if you make a few little techs in the deck, you can survive it. So yeah, I'm with you on the Duraludon for sure.
I mean, from my experience, I think Duraludon's a solid play, but my friend needed like 40 or so points at Salt Lake to get their invite. They bought Mew cards Friday night, played it 1-6-2 or 6-1-2 or something day 1, and like all they tested the night before was Mirror Match, because I think like 3 or 4 of our group played Mew to Salt Lake.
to be fair, I think that's actually really good advice, right? If you're gonna play Mew, know the Mirror Match.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Tord was recently streaming his like VOD review of his team challenge, and he was talking over a Mew Mirror match, and like it is so much more intricate than you'd expect. And if you know the Mirror match,
yeah, for sure.
Like you said, that's like 3 free wins right there, because there's going to be a lot of people who don't know it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's actually really solid advice for anyone who's like, I need the points and you want to take it into your hand. Duraludon, your fate is not in your hands. Your hands get thrown at you. Mew, you have a lot more control over everything. Know the mirror match. That's good advice for sure. Any other last second thoughts for anyone going to Baltimore from either of you, whether it's general tournament advice, meta advice that we didn't mention, deck advice that we didn't mention, or you think we got it all covered?
I think the big thing that I found and that I've kind of like theoried with my age up to Masters is if you want a day two, just play like a good deck. Like I played Gengar to Salt Lake, did day two. Then I just played Arc Mali or Arc Intel to the other three events, day two to all of them. I think just if you play a good, consistent deck, it doesn't have to be the best deck in the room. You can pretty easily day two as long as you're like an average player.
I completely messed up. I missed the chance to ask the perfect question. Piper, you aged up mid-season. A ton of people just aged up. Is that the best advice for any seniors who aged up into Masters that you have? Is there anything else that about that change of experience besides just playing a good deck?
I think just playing a good deck. Like, I think I have this like really weird opinion. I feel I actually think seniors is more difficult than Masters. Because with seniors, you have like 15 to 20 good players in a field of now like 40 to 50. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so that's, I guess it's probably more like 10 to 15 in a field of 40 to, when I was in seniors, I'm just going to go with that. It was like probably a solid 20 good players in like a field of 70 players. So you're more likely to, like you go past the first couple rounds and you hit a bunch of good players. Whereas Masters, like you have a field of probably like 50 to 70 like good players in like 1100 or something. And you're just like, if you're a good player, at least I feel, you're more likely to be able to like capitalize on hitting a worse player and just play better than them and win. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's just kind of been my logic throughout that. So that's why I'm like, oh, if I just play like a good consistent deck, I'll be fine going today too.
That makes perfect sense. And I think that's also really good advice. You're not the first person I've heard say that. All right.
Yeah, you get a one in a thousand chance of hitting Tord, or hitting me, 999, you know.
But so that is
versus like what seniors like a day two essentially.
Mm-hmm. Seniors is
everyone.
Once you get past like the second, just like top player, like it's just all top.
Yeah,
and you can easily go. You can make day two, and have gone all of day one without hitting a single player who even got a world's invite, let alone a day two world's player, which I assume when you say there's 20 good players, that's all of the top 16 is in there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, for sure. I think like the other thing is you go 6-2-1 and make day two versus you have to go 5-1-1 to top eight. And that second loss is a huge like I was 5-0-1 at NAIC and then I had bad luck against Mew and then I had bad luck against Palkia. And got to 5-2-1, so then I was on a win it in, but I still had a chance. And then I was 4-0-1 and went to win it in day two. Like I just think it's like a bit more I don't know like what the best word is, but like you can recover a lot easier after like one or I don't know.
No, that's like a perfect like it's like very forgiving in Masters, the fact that you can go 6-2-1 and then still make top eight. Like that's massive. You can have bad luck or bad variance. And this is coming from someone personally, Grant, Piper, I don't know if you're in the same boat or not. I never have an easy route into day two. I'm always losing in round 1-3 and then picking up another loss somewhere along the way. Like I'm never like, oh, I'm smooth. I'm 5-0-1. I have some room to play with. I'm always putting it hard on myself. And the fact that I can lose two and still kind of vibe my way through into day two has been really big for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a... Oh.
Go ahead.
There's that one event where Gabe Smart was like 0-2-1 or something. Mm-hmm. And then he like won the next, like he went 10-0-1 after that or something and then bubbled. But like, he started, if you start 0-2-1 at seniors, you're like hoping top 32 points or something, or maybe 16.
Yeah, that's, so, you have so much more control in Masters just simply because of the large amount of rounds, mm-hmm. like you said.
Yeah, I was going to say that the same thing happened, you know, sort of to me, like I started like 0-0-3 in tournaments. So like I've had way too many ties, and that's something, I guess my advice would be, is to know when to tell your opponent to play faster and know yourself when to play faster. And that goes back to the scooping as well, because the ties, you know, if you're playing for points, it's okay, I guess. like to have a few in there, but if you're trying to make day two and you're trying to do well, you need to have results.
Yes, the 504 into day two is not what I would suggest. It worked for Rob in I forget, Liverpool or something like that.
Yeah, I think but... so. I think it was 905 into cut.
Yeah, if, none of you listening are Robin Scholes, probably. Robin, if you're listening, send me a DM just saying, I listen, don't badmouth me again. But that's, he can do that. He's a world champion. The rest of us, don't do that. I promise, it's not worth it. Piper.
Yeah, for sure.
If the people want to find more of you, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Piper Lapine, just my name. I don't know, that's kind of it.
No sponsors?
No, if, unfortunately not. I mean,
if anyone wants to reach
I guess
out,
kind of. Yeah, that's true. Shout out to my local game store, Game Related, for just being pretty cool. But yeah, also my friends for testing. But yeah,
Grant, where can the people find you?
Twitter at RealBooCK, one word, and I don't have any sponsors either yet.
I feel like you need a little more results before people are going to be.
Well, I put my faces out there. I'm on however many of these podcasts. I will shamelessly rep you.
Myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_Magikarp. If this is your first time with the pod because you're going to Baltimore, be sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting platform and or YouTubes that you are currently on, because we're going to have more of these as the season progresses. And the best part, as someone who is until like a tier 2 player, I'm not quite Azul's level, but I'm a step below. I'm not going to any events until 2023, so I will happily leak everything for everyone, and you can trust that I'm telling you the truth, because none of the decks I play are anything that my teammates would play, because they never listen to me anyway. So that is the best reason I can tell you to subscribe to the pod. And this has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast, and we'll catch you all next week.